Senior Focus.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter of this edition of Senior Focus. And today's topic is intensification of Auckland. Should it be put on hold? I have with me Dick Bellamy, who was the former Dean of Science at Auckland University, the Emeritus Professor, and has served on a number of committees of council, the Regional Council in the past, for transport, works and parks. It's very good to have you with. Thank you very much, Dick.
It's nice to be here. Good afternoon.
And as we start, I think about the article in the Herald a couple of weekends ago about the intensification and the fact that Dick has got quite strong views on this. I've selected him particularly as a guest today because I feel he's got an overview, a long experience of the shortfall in intensification, where intensification has failed, different problems in planning that have occurred where it hasn't been well thought out, and particularly the provision for sewerage and so on hasn't been properly organised. And so with his background of watching these events and how they've unfolded at various points, I think that he has got a perspective that's worth listening to. And so starting off, can you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to come and get your viewpoint into the Herald?
Oh, well, it was a sense of frustration, really. I suppose watching what was going on, and particularly triggered by this most recent flooding event. And I perhaps should note that I extend my sympathy to the folk who've been directly affected. I haven't been. But it's sad to see how things have come unstuck. Having said that, I should say I'm not a professional planner or engineer. I'm actually a biomedical scientist. But I've always been interested in these sorts of areas, and I guess an element of frustration led me to writing that article in the Herald.
As listeners who tune into this program will be aware, we have talked in the past about intensification. We've talked about the unitary plan, and this program has been going 7 years now, so we've had many discussions about the shortfalls or the difficulties that may arise as a result of intensification. And recently we've talked to Trish Steens, and we've had a view of about the heritage. We've had John Burns from the Character Coalition. We've had Peter Carter, an architect, who's been involved with various developments in Milford and trying to seek mitigation against the worst of those. And all of these people have had really interesting viewpoints to put forward. But at the moment, it's been a situation where we felt there hasn't been enough gravitas to be able to persuade the council to put things on hold. And the storm seems to have delivered a window of opportunity here.
Well, I wouldn't really call it an opportunity. In a way, it's more in the nature of a tragedy. But I should make clear that my frustration really stems from the fact that there's some fairly obvious things that are based on common sense, more than anything else, about management of urban catchments that seem to have been disregarded in terms of the way things have happened recently in Auckland. And it's a particular issue to do with the provision of sewage and the handling of stormwater, the organisations that do that, how they interact with the planners, and how engineering solutions that are appropriate are found, and ones that we as community can afford. The afford bit is, of course, pretty important because we're not a particularly wealthy jurisdiction here in New Zealand, and there are limits to what we can spend.
Yes, and I wondered if you would like to comment specifically on, say, the Neola catchment or the Wairau floodplain, because I think there's some interesting issues there.
Yes, well, maybe I'm familiar with the Isle of Catchment, or less familiar having been a resident of it, but for those who don't realise, it's the largest catchment in all of urban Auckland. And it's essentially spans the area that swings around from Parnell, Ponsonby, past Mount Eden, past the edge of One Tree Hill, and then on Sweet Kings around to Mount Albert. And there's a little creek that runs down the middle of it called the Miola Creek. For such a large catchment, it's a very trivial creek, and it goes on through the hippos pool and the zoo and out into the harbour. And the reason why it's such a tiny creek is that the majority of the drainage in the Miola catchment and in one or two other areas of Auckland is underground. That is at the seat of quite a lot of the trouble that's occurred in the flooding in the Miola catchment and in some others, like Ellerslie would be another one, but not so much in some of the others that are not covered with the volcanics, but cover the original landfall. And so it's an interesting example of how things can go wrong when things aren't properly thought through, and that's what's happened, I think, in this last major storm event.
So the Miola catchment is actually, I think, drawn to people's attention that the lava caves are quite cavernous and create large areas of space underground. I'm just wondering, were these actually already compromised before the storm?
Well, I would say the creek wouldn't be compromised. It's a large aquifer, and a few years ago, about eight or so, when it was already decided that the central interceptor should be built. That's a large, very large capacity tunnel designed to carry contaminated stormwater from Newton Gully and also domestic sewage that is picking up the Ponsonby, Barry's Bay area, with a little branch and then off to Mongery. It's a very large tunnel, but it's not designed to take stormwater. The solution for stormwater, it was arrived at by a joint study between Metro Water and Auckland Council, where the decision was made that since the aquifer generally was not at capacity, it would be quite a good idea to use that as a way of getting rid of stormwater by encouraging stormwater collected in the catchment to discharge into the aquifer. Now, it's not quite clear as yet what exactly went wrong in the storm event, but it would seem common sense to say that the reason why the stormwater was not conveniently disappearing probably had something to do with the fact that the aquifer was full. But that's yet to be determined.
That's very interesting. It's something I wasn't fully aware of. And I'm sure listeners will be very intrigued. There is a review, I understand, planned to look into the infrastructure issues. And I'm just wondering whether you feel that that's going to shed light on this.
Well, hopefully it will. the review, of course, Rome's not built in a day when these issues arise, and the reason why I suggest in the Herald it might be quite a good time to sit down and have a cup of tea and think about it, is that this plan change, this proceeding plan, is the legislative way of the government authorising the intensification of entire catchments right throughout the Tier 1 cities in New Zealand, namely Christchurch, Wellington, I think Tauranga and Auckland, I think I've got that right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some sort of strange aspects to the legislation, and this refers to the fact that, as of right, owners of houses on or owners of correlated sections are able now to intensify to what's called a 3x3, that is to have three buildings rather than one building and to be three stories high. And that has some pretty serious consequences potentially if that intensification occurs in the wrong places, because of course as night follows day, that will increase the runoff from roads, driveways, pavements, impermeable areas and all the rest. And I would have thought that it follows that it would be quite sensible to think rather carefully before one starts intensifying the head of catchments. I never did geography in my university degree, but fiscal geographers know quite a bit about this. And I included in my article a phraseology of this, you know, if we're going to look at what's gone wrong, it really needs to be done on a catchment by catchment basis, because what might be the case in the Mjolnir catchment will be different to other catchments elsewhere in the city. But they've all got a runoff problem, but the solutions will be different for each. But I think the one thing that hold in common is that it would not really be very sensible, if one can't work out where the stormwater is going to go, to start intensifying the head of catchments. And a practical example of that would be Newmarket Gully. It's fairly known that those slopes of Remuera, the reason why so much water arrives down on the poorhouses and Shore Road and so forth is, of course, they get the total runoff from that the development intensification in Newmarket. So it's a pretty straightforward concept, really. I thought it would be fairly obvious to the technical experts. And I'm delighted to see that the council passed a unanimous resolution to look seriously at some of these issues. Whether or not they can persuade our masters in Wellington to the view of pausing for a moment whilst we think about matters before acting will remain to be seen. But there are some encouraging comments made by the mayor that you might have noticed in the Herald, indicating that there is some kind of element of, if I could use the word, nerviness about some of the directions in which current development is being headed. That's not to say, of course, that intensification is bad. It's a question of having intensification in the right places, where the infrastructure can be provided at reasonable cost, and where people, as a consequence, you don't get into a situation where people's houses are flooded.
And this having a cuppa, calling a halt, I haven't yet seen the exact wording of the motion that was passed. I'm wondering, was the motion actually worded in such a way as to ask the government to take a lie down on a cup of tea, or was it to halt the actual hearing process, or was it? I'm not quite sure the.
Well, I don't have. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. The thrust of the motion was to suspend or delay the major part of the hearings that have already commenced to examine the plan change. And at the same time to open up channels of communication, I think, with Wellington. Now, we are fortunate we've now got a minister for Auckland, the Honourable Michael Wood, MP, Cabinet Minister, and so it's not as though it's particularly difficult in a small country for these sorts of discussions to take place. And I would think that that would be a wise thing to do.
Certainly, it's what a lot of people have been wanting. I think many councillors calling for this, and I've said this on previous programs. I know some would like it completely halted, and some are interested in seeing how it can be modified. So there's a different shape of opinion there. I'm just wondering, though, in terms of the catchment, that's one issue, but there's also floodplains. And floodplains were areas that the council could actually specify back to the government in its response to the government's demand for change. They could actually ask for these to be special areas to be not included. And I understand that council was very interested in the foreshore along between Milford and Takapuna, for example. But I wondered whether you had any comments on that.
Well, it's floodplains have all been mapped. It's really something of an outrage, given the fact that they know that this event has actually occurred because, one would have to, one could perhaps need some historical research to understand exactly why one would map floodplains and then allow development at floor level to occur in those very areas. But you see, it's a bit of a moving target because the floodplain, of course, will vary depending on what's going on in the catchment. And, you know, New Zealand's got a long history of understanding these sorts of things in the rural sector where lessons have not had been learned sufficiently. And, when most of the North Island forest was clear felled to convert to sheep and cattle pasture, we had things called catchment boards, and the governance of areas and control of water was the responsibility of those catchment boards. We at one stage had an Auckland regional water board, which was in control of discharges and so forth. But now with the changes in administration, we have one city council that essentially covers all those functions, and separate corporate entity, Watercare. Watercare looks after sewage and water contaminated with sewage that does not look after stormwater. That's run by a different department of the Auckland Council. So there's an element of what I would call siloism, if that's such a word, that when one sets up different entities that are really essentially managing aspects of the same problem, they're in different buildings, at different locations, with different boards of directors, advisors, consultants, and all the rest, that's not really a very sensible way of coordinating the treatment of water overflows. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it means that folk need to really be interacting more closely together. And I just wonder whether that's been going on sufficiently. When I was on the regional council, that wasn't such a problem. The entire enterprise was in one building. If the engineers to do with stormwater wanted to talk to the engineers to do with sewage, or to the planners, then you could simply walk across to the table in the tea room and have a conversation. But these days we've got a very large organisation and siloed into a whole series of different buildings. Watercare is a new market, and I could go on. I think of AT, Auckland Transport, I think is still in my tap, even though they may have shifted, and so I could go on. And that's the sort of pyramidal-like structure that is bound to cause problems of sort and lack of communication, coordination.
Yes, and from my experiences, some listeners will be aware, having been an elected rep, I had some introduction to the complexity of Auckland Council, and the degree of siloisation was evident to me as a local board member, having to sometimes make decisions that involved conversations with a number of these entities, and often they were held separately, whereas it would make much more sense to have had those conversations joined up. But that didn't actually happen. I think once an organisation gets to that point, it's a corporate animal and it's operating with a very risk-averse kind of strategy, it's not easy to get outcomes that serve people, that are what needs to happen. I think that's one of the dilemmas. It's not so much the will of the councillors to be obstructive or to be difficult or to make things more complicated, but in seeking solutions, maybe quite clear what sort of outcome or result you want, but how to get there might be a very difficult piece of work.
I'd be a little bit positive about these things. I think we should be pretty happy that the council passed a unanimous resolution. It didn't do quite what I suggested of putting everything on hold, but of course there are legal difficulties between the government and the council, and also the complication of the work of the hearings panel on Plan Shape 74 has already started. And there is a legal view that was presented to council that to significantly change the current change would, you know, turn the clock right back to zero and have to require a notification of a brand new plan change and slow things down perhaps even more. But I think at least at the minimum, what could be done would be to at least slow down the anything done in the catchments to ensure that the situation doesn't become worse whilst one does one's homework. And I made the suggestion in my opinion piece that neither the government or council have really done their homework properly. I'm not saying that they're not entirely competent and hardworking servants of the community, but the facts of the matter are that huge amount of flooding occurred, and yes, it was a 100-year flood, but maybe 1 in 100 is not the appropriate parameter to be using these days. Maybe special treatment should be afforded floodplains. Development controls perhaps should be imposed, probably to the chagrin of private parties, and particularly to Kāinga-Ora, who seem to be have recently been given extraordinary powers under their new act. But seem to be, from their submissions to the hearings, seem to be acting in a rather aggressive fashion. And most of all, it's something that the situation worse, and to be applying in a blanket fashion intensification, you know, around the heads of catchments that are already at Bibbly is just sort of not very sensible.
Yes, and so would you see that then as a modification of Plan 78 in sense of coming in with some additional zoning?
Well, I'm not a town planner. Nor am I an architect or an engineer. But common sense would say, for a start, one would think very carefully about floodplains, and perhaps there needs to be a buyout option for those where it's just not feasible to who are in serious hollows, and there's lots of discussion like this going on, you know, with respect to the rural sector at the moment. We haven't purposely got into the clip-top arguments, but you know, the scientific basis of that has been known. Things have improved quite a bit, but it's been known essentially for quite some time that it's not such a good idea to have a house within spitting distance of the edge of the Narrating Quill. But then some of the other disaster areas are unstable, very steep, largely coastal cliffs where they weren't really perched in the manner around the edge of the harbour, but rather on slopes which are essentially unstable. So there's no simple solution, but I'm confident that the Auckland Council and the other entities involved have got the technical expertise to sort some of these things out. But I do hope they rely on some basic scientific principles and not on kind of what I'd call urban envy or nimbyism or whatever. Doing anything to the catchments that will exacerbate the problem by intensifying in the wrong places is just sort of would be seriously inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is something we're going to be watching with interest, how things develop. I'd love to have you back again to talk further. And when we're in our new studio, which I can see on the horizon, although I can't give you a date, we will be able to have panel discussions, and we'll be able to have people with differing viewpoints actually around the table at the same time. And that will just add a bit more spice to the program. So with that in mind, I'm going to call a halt to our session today, and I hope you'll be back with us next time.
Thank you very much. It's been very nice talking to you, and listeners have been listening. Well, thank you for that too.
Thank you very much, Dick. And I must say, I commiserate with those who have had bad experiences through to the storms and the flooding, and I sympathise. I wasn't affected this time, but I have been in the past in different situations. So, yes, it's not a pleasant place to be. So good luck with the clean-up. Thanks for listening.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
People in motion, for those who come to see. 104.7.